Hello, everyone, and welcome into a special edition of Debate Night. We're joined by Trevor here, Brody remotely, Silas is behind the camera, ready to pop into some of these hot takes. Should be a pretty good show. We've got a little bit to talk about. I know Brody put out on Twitter to get some topics that I'm sure are always fun. But Brody, you were just traveling a lot last week. Last week's episode, I think, were you in the Dominican Republic last week?
Yeah.
For your episode?
Yeah. I was in the...
How did the live stream end up going?
It was...
I was asleep by the time you started.
Yeah. I think people enjoyed it for the most part, those that were able to tune in. Hopefully, what's the situation with the Apple Podcasts?
So
potentially get on today.
What happened? Yeah. Okay. It's on my computer.
Oh, okay.
I hit download and it took like 3 hours. And during that 3 hours, I was like, oh, I have 3 hours till it downloads. I should go. I forget what I went and did.
Okay.
Left, did something. Completely forgot I had hit download. So when I came back, I just didn't upload.
Well, people will be able to double up and listen to both of them, I guess, today. But yeah, no, I think it went fairly well. It was kind of obviously a little bit of a difficult situation because the way the internet worked at the hotel is you could only have two devices at once to get on the internet. So my cell phone was on the internet. Kelsey's cell phone was on the internet. But then we couldn't get my iPad on the internet. So there was a big debacle of when we started the live stream. My phone was basically not usable anymore because as soon as I got out, the live stream would end. And then Kelsey was trying to get into my email, but then it was sending codes to my phone and my iPad, but I couldn't get my phone code and then my iPad couldn't get on the internet. So there was a little bit of a debacle at the end. But the people that were on the live stream, they got like 30 minutes of extra time and the podcast didn't actually, I guess make sure you cut out the first, like, I don't know what it was. I think I sent it to Silas.
You texted me the timestamp.
Yeah. But when
the audio version starts.
Yeah. But it's been a while since we did a live like that. So we got a lot of, fan interaction and stuff and it was good. I think it was solid. It's tough to kind of come up with stuff like disc golf is just not, I don't know what it is. I don't know if we need to start following, you guys obviously follow a lot more of the guys on tour than I do. Is there stuff that's happening? Are people tweeting out stuff? Is like people posting stuff on Instagram or is like nothing really happening in the off season this year?
Nothing's well, it depends on what you consider news. Because like stuff being posted,
anything.
Like we could talk about Colton and Kona getting married.
Yeah, probably not that. Yeah, more.
As I'm saying, like it's a lot. Like there's not much disc golf stuff going down in the off season.
Casey White, he made a mod to his van so that he can carry his golf clubs with him this next year before. Big news.
Big news. Big break news.
So I saw.
Breaking news.
One of the topics I wasn't able to get around with, last debate night. Was people, someone was telling me, I don't know if you guys saw this story, but someone was telling me that when Drew Gibson went down to Australia for like the national championship down there. I need to find it again. It was something along the lines of like, can you talk about what pros should be required or expected to do when they go to tournaments? Because I guess this person's perspective was Drew didn't do enough outside of actually playing the tournament.
Interesting.
So I don't, did you guys see the story on that at all or no?
I mean, what's the story there? He just showed up, played a tournament and left.
Yeah.
Upset about
it. I mean,
I saw that he played the Australian championship because him and Jennifer Allen won, I believe.
Yeah. I think if I can, let me see if I can find this recently deleted. I just went through all my notes. So.
The only Drew story I saw was the tweet where he had stamped the Jordan logo on some discs.
Yeah, see, like that's interesting stuff. That's
his. Well, I had that to talk about last week, and then obviously we couldn't end up doing the show.
Okay.
And his defense to people who are calling him out, because obviously the Jordan logo is copywritten, and with something that's copywritten, you can't make money selling it. His defense was, well, people on Etsy do it. So,
Sias, are you able to bring stuff up? As we're talking, it doesn't have to be obviously instantaneously, but are you able to like throw up as we're talking, tweet and stuff?
Yeah, just give me a second.
Because that way, I think I saw some comments talking about how that would be for all of our podcasts, honestly. I know, obviously, it'd be harder for grip locks because you would have to do it in post. But I would say like that would be a good thing moving forward is like if we are talking about a specific tweet, if Silas can find that tweet, which shouldn't be too difficult, and then like literally be able to pop
a screenshot and send it to him.
Either that or like he can just have a window that like I don't know if you're using OBS or whatever, but that way you can people at home that are watching can kind of see what we're talking
about. We'll throw it up in post if nothing else. So basically, let me just read you this because I had an idea that I thought would be kind of funny. So essentially, Drew tweeted that any of you interested in the jump and disc with a Jumpman stamp? Well, we've been taking all the discs with quote unquote bad stamps from the bag, which is like his monthly subscription box thing, and added a Jumpman to them, and they're available now for Black Friday. Dana Vici responded and said, sick Jordan Brand collab. And then Drew said, please turn me in. I'd love nothing more than to get an email from Jordan Brand for selling 18 discs. LOL, I'll hang that letter in my office proudly. So my idea, and just hear me out here, we take some of our misprints that we've gotten shipped, and we stamp the Finish Line logo, his disc golf company, on them. We then sell them and promote it so that we get Drew to say, hey, can't do that. Then I will screenshot that and frame it and put it on my desk.
There you go.
I thought that'd be pretty fun.
Unfortunately for Drew, it'd just be free advertising. For the Jordan brand, it's like an actual sellable asset.
Yeah.
Whose logo, like, is there a logo in disc golf that is like so big that it's actually like a sellable asset, like you, by stealing it?
Well, you guys should know. You guys just talked about the best logos in disc golf.
I know, but like I would argue, well, your logo, like the Dark Horse logo, is and like maybe like
the tough part is there's no like the Dark Horse logo is the only logo because it's not a disc golf logo. It comes from outside disc golf.
That has a tie-in.
Anything in disc golf, like the PM logo is probably the biggest non-brand logo that is a disc golf-specific logo, right? But the problem is a disc golf-specific logo can never be bigger than disc golf itself.
It's true.
And so, like, it can only get but so big, and I don't think it can get big enough to make it, like, I feel like the legal action would cost more than what the lawsuit would actually be
also,
for within disc
golf. Also like literally giving them free advertising within the sport.
Yeah. Versus the Jordan brand, the legal action would cost them nothing compared to what the lawsuit could have been. Obviously 18, like they would just, if it was only 18 discs, it's not that big of a deal. But this dude was just another person on Twitter was calling Drew out and he was just defending it back and forth. Yeah. And it was very funny.
I mean, I think you don't have to dig too deep to kind of see how like a lot of disc golf operates right now, where it's they see something that someone else is doing and then they basically just do a little twist and do it themselves, which again is like not a bad thing. You know, looking at someone else that's more successful, bigger company, whatever, and then kind of taking what they're doing, not a bad thing. But when it comes to outright just using someone else's logo or brand identity or whatever, that's where I think it crosses the line. So an example would be, you know, tons of people have asked me to, you know, do like a Gators, either a Gators design or like Ohio State design. And it's like, if I just, you know, the Block O, like someone made me a Block O Meteor. Like if I were to make that and sell it myself, I mean, I would get sued, or I would be opening myself up to being able to get sued. Because that's illegal. So that's where I think it crosses the line, is when I think Etsy, again, just because someone's doing it on Etsy, I don't think necessarily gives you the right to do it. No. I feel like we all should know that like using someone else's brand for profit is illegal and shouldn't be done.
Right. I mean, and the problem is too, like when you're, I feel like Drew's brand is very much like trying to be a professional and like advance what professionalism is in disc golf. And I think he likes the idea of that. And then like, so this is very counterintuitive to that brand being like, well, we're so unimportant that Jordan, what's Jordan going to care when I steal his logo?
Yeah.
Like it's very counterintuitive. I also like there's definitely levels to, like, obviously it's one thing when you pay your buddy to, who's really good at disc dying, to die your favorite team on your disc and put in your bag.
Sure.
Right. Like, that's one thing. But when you are, not only are you not even like painting or dying, you're literally just stamping a logo, like, in its exact, it is the logo. That's not an interpretation. It is the logo. And you're then selling it like through a website that is like supposed to be a legit manufacturer and retailer of discs. That's when it's like,
well, because like painting, right, and dying,
it's more of your own interpretation.
I'll say there's some type of line in there where it's like, it, as an art, like an artistic interpretation,
right?
Right? Because like, I feel like,
yeah, I think
I feel like I could go paint, like, do a bunch of Duke basketball paintings, right? And
yeah,
not really have into too much trouble.
No, I think, but you are allowed to do that.
But if I were to create a Duke basketball shirt,
right, that's interesting. Actually, I don't know.
I don't know where the line is, like, but yeah, like, cause like to, like, me, if I saw someone like selling Jordan paintings,
right,
I wouldn't think anything of it because like, that's like an artist.
I feel like a lot of it comes down to like, when you're doing like a screen print or a stamp, it's like a digital file of that exact logo.
It's where you can copy the exact pixels.
Like, exactly. Right. Like, there's nothing changed about it. Where,
oh, that's, second, that just brought up a memory.
The second you start painting something, like, it's not exactly the logo. It's now going to be slightly different.
There's no way I will be able to find this because this was so many years ago. But Drew, back, way back, came out with a logo and he stamped it on some discs. That was the Corvette logo. And he rebranded it a little bit to be like for him. I think he even put it on a hoodie.
You're saying like the Corvette car? Commented,
yeah. And I commented and I was like, hey, I don't really know. Like, I think that is a very fine line. Like, I don't know if you change the Corvette logo enough. Like, you might have like potential issues if Corvette were to care about this. And he responded back and was like, no, I looked into it. Don't worry. I changed enough. He responded in a way that was very defensive. This was before Foundation. This has been years ago. I completely forgot
about after that people. Entirely.
But it's so funny that it was the same. Like, it's just Drew again. I mean, which, to be fair, Gateway has sold Jordan branded wizards for a long time.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. I've seen,
find the specific rules.
I've seen many.
Yeah, this is not a
many players throwing wizards with the Jumpman stamped on them. This, and I've always been like, it's just like a thing where disc golf. Yeah, I think knows.
This is not a. This is not a small Drew Gibson company's area. Not gonna care. This is so, this is a disc golf situation.
This person was asking online, like, are you allowed to use a company's logo in a painting? And that basically this guy's citing some of the trademark rules and is saying that trademark holders have the right to prevent the use of their trademarks by others in any context that is likely to cause confusion or deceive as to the affiliation, connection, or association of the trademark holder with another. In other words, as long as the use of a logo has artistic relevance and reasonable accuracy,
in the painting,
an artist may include trademarks in the execution of their art, so long as it does not represent the said trademark or relationship of the owner of the trademark to the artist.
So basically, as long as the painting is like very obvious that Jordan wasn't paying.
Yeah,
it seems like it's worded in a way that
will favor the person that owns the trademark.
Definitely. So how most copyright, trademark, fair use stuff is like, it's a lot of gray areas that it's like, tread lightly, push it as far as you want. But at the end of the day, it's not, if you're the one who doesn't own the trademark, you're most likely going to lose in court.
Correct.
If it gets to court.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, we actually just had someone tweeted us at Griplocked Twitter.
I saw that
10 minutes ago.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it was like, the Griplock podcast is not as interesting this offseason. I feel like last offseason was way more about player movement. And so I quote tweeted it. I was like, someone tell the players to start moving. we cover all the player movement that's happening. It's just not a lot going on right now.
Disc golf needs like a trade deadline. So like, we just know at a certain, because the problem with the disc golf offseason is like, a lot of times it takes till like the beginning of February for a lot of the deals to go through. I mean, I remember when Ezra, that year we were waiting for him to be announced. I mean, we even got the inside track on that a little bit, but it didn't get announced publicly until like a week before the first event, I feel like. And I get it. Like, people are preparing. Like, it's one thing if you sign Ricky Wysocki and you're chartering a helicopter.
Yeah.
Like, that's one thing. But yeah, it takes a long time for
things to move. The problem is like, because disc golf's big enough that people are interested in where players are going.
Right.
But it's small enough that players are practicing in just like public areas.
Yeah.
So that's what happened last year. I was just getting pictures of pros.
We need to start getting those.
I was getting pictures of pros throwing different branded discs, wearing like Team Infinite shirts, because they're just at public courses.
Well, the issue too.
Like, I just got a text, a DM from someone who explained to me, I'm not going to say it this year, but explained to me where someone was going because they were just playing around at a local course and saw the person. And the person was asking if they had any plastic of a specific brand. Dang. Just asking a stranger.
Whoa.
Like, hey, yo, do you have any of this? And then, like, they DM'd me and they're like, hey, just so you know, so-and-so was looking for plastic of this brand. Well, I'm like,
there's not a lot of
how do you expect that not to get out?
I know. There's not a lot of news circulation either, because, like, if you're talking about, like, the NFL or the NBA, you're going to have, like, your Schefters of the world, and they're going to be getting texts from agents.
Oh, you mean TMZ?
Yeah, really. They're gonna be getting texts from agents that they're connected with. We're talking with them about this. Oh, we're talking about this, about that. Because, like, in the sports world, disc golf has misinterpreted, like, we obviously know this, but, like, whenever you leaked Ricky's deal or whatever, like, they got all upset about that, called us TMZ when it was less actual journalism. It was an actual fact.
And I had been DM'd.
This guy was correct.
I had been DM'd by... I mean, I won't say any of the sources, but we'll just say 7 to 10 pros that are on tour.
But here's the...
That were telling me, one of them literally told me, stop hinting at it and go ahead and tweet it.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though, is like, if I'm an agent and my player is negotiating with companies, like, if you're talking about, like, what's happening in negotiations, like, If I'm texting the Adam Schefter of the world, telling him to, like, hey, tell the media that our guy is doing this and that, you can actually, like, up the value and the hype around your player by doing that. It might cause you to get more phone calls from manufacturers because let's say, here's a scenario. Let's say you're Calvin Heimberg and you're negotiating with Innova, and the agent texts you and says, hey, I want you to leak. Calvin Heimberg's currently in talk with Innova somewhere in the range of 3 years. $1 million.
I'm going to switch Wi-Fis real quick. I'll be at BRB.
Okay. Let's say that price goes out because of your tweet, and Discraft sees it and goes, that's all they're going to pay Heimberg? We can do that or more. And then they call the agent and say, hey, we can do 4 years, $4 million for Heimberg. We'd be willing to pay that. Like, that's the kind of thing that can do. It doesn't just have to benefit the fans. It can benefit the players, too. There's a reason Adam Schefter and those people get that information. It's not just because the agents want to talk about it. They're trying to benefit their player, their strategy.
Yeah. I think that's what's going on in disc golf right now, is there's not strategy behind it.
No.
It's just disc golf, a lot of players on the professional side and a lot of organizations, disc golf has grown to like a new level of interest and stuff, to where operating as if disc golf still small, because like it's still in many ways feels small, but in many ways it's a lot bigger. So like when you're operating and you start telling your buddies the exact details of your deal and stuff like that,
it gets around.
Years ago, no one cared.
Yeah,
that much.
Right.
Nowadays, so many people care.
Yeah.
That like I tell you, right? As I'm like, oh, Trevor's my best bud. I'm gonna just tell him, yeah, man, I'm signing a deal with Lone Star to be on their Ranger team for 5 years, 15 mil. And then you are like, holy cow, dude, that's crazy. So then you in confidence are talking with Connor at lunch and you're like, yeah, I heard Hunter's signing a 5 year, 15 mil deal. I have an NDA. I can't disclose it to anyone.
Right.
So disclosing it to you, I'm like, hey, just make sure this doesn't go anywhere. And you're like, well, I can trust Connor. You right. don't have an NDA. So you tell Connor. Connor sure as heck doesn't have an NDA because I'm not even the one that told him.
Right.
So then Connor has this information and tells Silas. By the time it gets to Silas, Silas probably might have no connection to me. He doesn't give two fricks.
Right.
But Silas knows the exact information.
Exactly.
So then Silas goes and
he also might not tell. By the time you get to the fourth person, they might not even know that it's important to keep it a secret.
Yeah. So then Silas might think it's just public information. He goes and tells half the people at his club.
Yeah.
And then half the people at their club all start DMing. And I can't be the only person who's getting these DMs.
Right.
They all start DMing people. And like, so then now the contract information is just out there because spoiler alert, I also wasn't the only person that knew Ricky was going to DD. It was all over every social media platform. So I was just the one that was willing to be like,
probably knew.
Well, no, I'm saying Reddit knew. I saw it on Facebook multiple times.
Yeah.
I was just the only person that was willing to like tie my name to me and like, well, hey, if no one else is going to say it's official, I'll say it's official. That was how it happened. But like at the end of the day, that's what ends up happening is like, in like if Giannis Antetokounmpo signed a big deal, and Giannis has like his legal team, his agent, stuff like that, that deal is only getting out if it's supposed to get out, if it's a strategy play.
Correct.
Like Giannis isn't going to, he might tell his family, but his family's not going and spreading that to all of Milwaukee because that type of information in a big sports world is worth a lot of money.
Right.
To where if that information gets out and not a strategic way to get out, then that's a big problem. Which is that's like kind of what's happening in disc golf right now.
Well, I think
versus like what you were saying, agents can use it as like marketing pull, negotiation power, or just a way to generate hype.
Companies
like,
can leak it themselves.
When Schefter tweets that a player's going, there's like all this hype around it.
Yeah.
And every time it's not confirmed yet. It's not confirmed for another few weeks, but it creates this huge media storm around this player.
Well,
that if like the Texans just tweet so-and-so's coming, it might not be nearly as big.
I'm going to give you another example of how you can use this as a company, not even just an agent. Let's say you're Dynamic and this is the Ricky situation, and you have Hunter tweet out, rumor has it, or not rumor has it, like my sources confirm Ricky Wysocki is going to Dynamic on a blah, blah, blah deal. Announcement post will be coming soon. You have them say that. Guess who's going to be checking Dynamic Disc Instagram every single day until it comes out? All these people. And they're going to be looking at your Instagram feed. Like you can use it to draw people to you. Like there's so much. I think right now, after last year with all the stuff that would get leaked, I think disc golf kind of is probably really hush-hush this year. They probably almost see it as like a challenge to keep it a secret, right? Because they don't want to let like the media get a hold of stuff. They want to release things on their own term, but they're not realizing the opportunity.
Yeah.
I was going to say it's interesting how, because you're just bringing up basketball. People in basketball, I would say the majority of fans in basketball care about where players are going, who's getting re-signed, who they're picking up in the draft. There obviously would be some talk if, you know, Curry got out of his Under Armour contract and signed with Nike. There would be some talk. There would be articles written. People would talk about it. But it would not be nearly as big of a story as if LeBron demanded a trade and is going now to the Washington Wizards, right? So, like, in that sport, the king is trades. The king is signing new players. That is what people care about more. Same with football. But if you go to golf, which is more of an individual sport and is more similar to disc golf in the idea that there aren't really necessarily teams, and the only real thing to talk about on like the club side is like what clubs they're switching with. I remember there were some stories that would come out, like when Justin Rose went with that, Trevor, what was that company that he went with?
The Irons.
Homa?
It's
no.
The Japanese. No, it's the Japanese.
Yeah, it's the Japanese Irons. It's, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
No one was using.
Well, it's this.
No one was using them though, but that was like a thing that was talked about a lot. You just don't really hear. That's almost like, there's almost like two sides of like golf media. There is that side of like the business of like, oh, Rolex just signed this player. But that is like such on the small spectrum of like interest. No one really talks about that, but do you guys think it's because disc golf just does not have anything else going on? There's nothing else to talk about. That's why that is always a big discussion. Will there ever be a time where someone switches from Innova to Discraft and it's like, oh, okay, like, but that's not a big, huge story. It's just,
I think it's the nature of disc golf and saying, so like if I'm playing, let's use Tiger Woods as an example. If I'm Tiger Woods, I'm playing with Nike and I'm playing a bladed iron, and I switch to TaylorMade and I start playing a bladed iron that looks exactly the same. There's not really a noticeable difference. Whereas in disc golf, changing manufacturers and having to give up your go-to disc is like a very big deal. It's way more drastic. And like, you might have a certain manufacturer that you really like. They're like, I might love Titleist Vokey wedges, and then I move to, you know, whatever other company and have to, I switch to Callaway and I got to play the Mac Daddy grind, GM grind wedges or whatever. But it's not nearly as drastic, in my opinion, switching golf clubs. I would say driver would be the biggest deal. Like if you're used to playing a TaylorMade driver and you got to switch, or yeah, and
putters
like that.
Putters probably too.
Putter would probably be big, but I think in disc golf, like when you're talking about a player who might be throwing nukes their whole career and making all their money with that disc, and then they gotta just drop it. I feel like it's way more drastic. Just because like they might not find a disc that does the same thing. Mm. And I think
from a fan perspective too, in golf, like from what I understand, from what I've seen,
might be a money
thing. There's not really a bunch of like Tiger Woods, like signature club that like comes out tour series club every year. Oh, no. You get the Tiger Woods driver, right? Or a ball, whatever. But in disc golf, like, if Calvin Heimberg were to switch from Innova, and let's say that I'm a big Calvin Heimberg fan, but I'm not a Destroyer fan, or I don't like the Toro. I'm a big Zeus and Zone guy. And then he comes to Discraft. Now all of a sudden, my favorite player is throwing the same disc as me, and I can now get a Tour Series Zone possibly that says Calvin Heimberg on it, or whatever it may be.
You might be onto something there.
I think there's so much more like direct tie, like, because of how manufacturers right now market players and market the discs they throw, there's so much of a direct tie to the players and their discs that it's almost more a team mentality from a fan's perspective of like Paul with Innova in a lot of ways was like Michael in Chicago, right? Where like, or we'll go with LeBron in Cleveland, where like, when LeBron went to Miami, that sent shockwaves throughout the world, right? Just like when Paul went to Discraft, because at the time, LeBron was synonymous with Cleveland. Yeah. Paul was synonymous with
I think in disc golf, it is easier. Somehow, it is a lot easier in disc golf. And I think it's because of how...
I think it's the price
I think
point.
It's how much... I think it's also just the amount that disc golfers have to rely on their manufacturers. They're very synonymous with their manufacturers at this point.
Yeah.
It's like, and I think it's also how visible it is. Like, I could watch an entire round of golf, and unless I know golf well, I might not even recognize, or unless I look at the golf bag, I guess that might give it away. But if I'm just watching a guy swing, I might not even recognize the clubs he's using. Disc golf discs are pretty visible a lot of times, like obviously big, loud logos, very distinct.
It's also on the back of their shirts.
But I think they become so synonymous because of that. That also kind of adds the tie in, because like in golf, like
well,
there
is
are
that
players,
do you think that's like, do you think that's a problem? Do you think it's a problem that the manufacturers are during coverage have more of that than the actual players? Do you think that's an issue?
I don't think,
like you
I
just
think
said
more
like
than
when
the,
you're watching more than when the you're players. Watching golf. You're just focusing on the actual golfer. You're not necessarily focused on...
I don't think
on...
it steals the spotlight, though. Like, I don't think it's like the manufacturers are stealing the spotlight. I think it's just, like I said, when you think about a player, it's easy to right away know what...
Like, when I think Gannon Burr, I think Prodigy.
Right.
Like, if Gannon Burr were to leave Prodigy and go to any other company, that would be a shock.
And
like, that would be a big...
Yeah,
story.
But
there
if you were, if
that
you,
become very...
I was gonna say, if you follow golf, you're gonna, it's gonna be the same exact thing. You're gonna know what golfers use. If you follow golf like you follow disc golf, yes, you will.
Maybe not, but maybe not to the same.
But
depth,
would it
though.
Be
like
would
if
be,
I name a, if I name obviously the popular players? Absolutely. Like I know that Spieth is huge with Under Armour and plays Titleist. I know that Ricky plays Puma and Cobra.
Let's do a test.
I feel like once you get.
Let's do a test.
If you go towards the top one, like the 100th player in the world, I'm going to be clueless. And in disc golf, I'm pretty sure I'm going to know.
No. Give me the 88th.
One of those players
right,
left.
Give me not in the 88th. Give me the 55th player in the world. Look it up. Tell me who the 55th player in the world
in
is.
Disc
in
golf?
Disc golf or golf?
Disc golf.
Okay.
We're going to do a test. Because you just said, I know you guys will, because you guys probably pay attention to it like anyone.
Well, we follow.
My thing is, if you follow golf very closely, as closely as you guys follow disc golf, you're going to know who everyone plays in the top 50. What I think, though, is
but do you think it would be as big of a storyline if I don't know who in golf?
No. That's what I'm saying. It's not. That was my whole point. Is it's not nearly as big of a storyline. Even the top guys.
Yeah.
Even the top guys. The storylines that are big are when they left tour, when they went to a different tour. Those are big storylines.
Yes, obviously, the live
the 30th player in the world.
That would be a huge storyline in disc golf too.
I'm going to give you an example. Like around the 50th player in the world.
Yeah.
Luke Sampson.
Okay. Well, that's okay. That's you picked the one person that's synonymous to one company, but
Cole Radalin.
Oh, that one. No one's going to know. Well, okay. So I have a group. Hold on. Well, yeah, I know that, but I have a group of,
you just said no one's going to know.
Yeah. I mean, that was an easy
one. I'm saying no one, like, I don't think the common watcher of disc golf is going to know that.
I would agree with that statement. Oh,
you don't even want me to test it?
You can test it. I would agree with your statement, though.
Spell his last name for me so I don't spell it wrong.
R-E-D-A-L-E-N.
R-E-D-A-L-E-N.
Yeah. But then, because the thing is, if I go to like 50th in the world in golf right now, and I'm looking at Harris English.
No, TaylorMade.
I have no idea what Harris English is.
Yeah, but you don't follow. That's not fair. You don't follow golf nearly as much as disc golf. You have a podcast that you talk about.
But here's the thing. I used to follow golf way more than disc golf. And it's just their manufacturers that players play with is just not part of the narrative.
Correct. No, we're agreeing on that.
That's what Brody's saying. Is that a problem? Right,
that's my whole argument.
I think one of the reasons for that, though, Trevor, is kind of like we were talking about, is obviously what Hunter was saying, I think is facts, in the sense of they market players so much more heavily on the products. So it's like you get it more. But I think the price point matters. So if I already have a TaylorMade, if I bought TaylorMade irons because Rory went to TaylorMade, and then Rory 2 years later signs with Callaway, maybe I buy those Callaway irons, but it's like I just spent $1,500 on these. Disc golf, it's so much easier that if Calvin leaves Innova and goes to Discraft, like Hunter's example, it's so easy just to spend $25 to get a disc. So I think the price point matters a little bit.
That is a great point.
It does also, you did make a point where I've said this before, but golf clubs are marketed not really around the player.
Correct.
Almost ever. They might be used in a commercial, but it's more the technology of the golf club. Like you look at a PXG commercial, you're just going to see them talking about price point technology. Whereas a disc commercial, like without a player throwing it and talking about it, like what is it going to tell you? Oh, it is plastic and round and looks like all the other ones. Like there's no new technology. What?
They can.
What are they going to say though?
Like gyro, they might tell you
like what the disc is supposed to do, but really like it doesn't really have any punch to it.
But how much of that is marketing hype? Like how easy would it be like Italian blend plastic? That was a great example.
Right, but golf clubs have actual innovation in golf. Now it's slowed down.
But I'm saying, how much of that is marketing innovation?
That doesn't really change my argument. I'm just saying, that's the angle golf goes, and disc golf doesn't.
But you're saying, what are they going to do in disc golf? I'm saying, if like disc golf could just change their copy and find like.
Right, but this is beside my point. My point was that's a reason why players are synonymous brands even more.
Yes.
Because that's the current state.
Yeah, I'm just saying it would be very easy for disc golf to go that direction.
Can we think?
Because I would imagine half the golf technology is like making such incremental changes that it's not going to matter to a player.
Right, but actually there. There's only, you can't say anything about a disc other than the plastic and the shape of it. Right now, which with golf clubs, there's so many more.
What's another sport that's synonymous with that? Like, as I'm trying to, I'm blanking.
Like players with their sponsor.
I'm blanking on a sport of where
disc golf's very unique in it, though, because like
I think in every other sport, everyone
that manufactures a basketball is making the same product. There's small nuances.
No,
but
you have to go to more individual sports. If you go
every tennis racket,
if you go
tennis racket,
Do they do the same thing?
I'm saying, like, at the end of the day, as a beginner, a tennis racket's a tennis racket to me. Whereas in disc golf, the equipment makes up the game so much more than other sports. Like, it is so important because, like, for years.
But what if every manufacturer had the same disc, though?
Then yes.
Like,
then
isn't that going
golf.
To?
But they don't. Yeah. That's the
so,
biggest.
So
thing.
Are we? Is it? So it. This is why I think. I think disc golf is too young right now to where there is enough variability between manufacturers where it matters. So eventually there won't be, right? Eventually it will be the point of like every disc that Innova has, Discraft has. Every disc that Discraft has, Latitude has. And like everyone has basically the same exact disc, right? Like what's stopping that?
Yeah.
We just talked about trademarks, but it's not that. There's no patents. There's no patents stopping Latitude from making every single disc that Discraft has, right? So, like, maybe
as far as I know, that's correct.
I think there will eventually. I think it's already getting there. But, yeah, I think there will eventually be so much overlap that – now, the other thing is right now, plastic blends across manufacturers, there are still quite a big difference.
But I mean, that's going to be the golf situation where it's like, oh, we just came
well,
up
I think
with
if
this
you're,
new,
tough part, though,
this
if you're
new
watching
metal.
Disc golf, though,
you know,
here's the tough thing though that I think counters a little bit is I think if so, each manufacturer. I don't think every manufacturer is going to ever make the exact same plastic because each people like different feels, right? So some people are going to like C-Line versus Champion versus Lucid versus Z. But what I think that the counter argument to everyone making the same disc is if you had the exact Destroyer mold and you made it in those four different plastics, they would all fly different. Yeah. Like a Destroyer in Lucid is going to fly different than a Destroyer in Champ, which is going to fly different.
Well,
than
I'm not necessarily saying
I don't think that matters. Molds.
Eventually, I'm saying everybody accomplishes discs that do the same thing.
Well, I think that already has happened, but the feel and stuff like that makes it where players become very loyal to different discs.
But I don't think what you said matters.
Like, if you wanted to go find a Destroyer, you could find a...
It's more like if you're watching disc golf, I think what we're trying to say is like right now, if you watch golf, you hit... Everybody is playing pretty much four through pitching wedge.
But I think that's the important thing, is they're all the same name.
So right, like that's in disc golf, if they stopped naming discs on coverage and... People already carry somewhat similar bags as far as like how they layer their discs. If they stop naming discs on coverage, honestly, if they just stop doing that and you just watch players, because like a lot of players throw very similar shots to accomplish the shots they need. And I think you would start losing it a little bit more. But then I think the other big thing is out there on tour, they're not wearing their manufacturer plastered over them like a build.
That's what I'm saying.
If
is
you
like
watch a disc golf tournament.
Is it more geared towards that?
They didn't name the discs, and they were all wearing generic branded clothing. You'd have no clue what people were throwing.
But I still think I'd be curious, and this would only – there's no way to know the answer to this, but I'd be curious in golf, if golf was at the lower price point, right,
yeah.
to where when Rory or someone switches manufacturers, it is very easy to switch the majority of your bag to follow them. Would it be a bigger talking point? Because like in disc golf, think of how many people had full Innova bags. And now our full Discraft bags.
Here's the other thing, though. In golf, such a large percentage of the people that play golf don't follow golf at all. Like people, even people that love
golf. I think that's the same as disc golf, though.
Whereas like disc golf.
I think that's the same.
I don't know.
A lot of, I would say the majority of players don't follow the Pro Tour.
Correct.
Probably, yes, the majority.
I mean,
but
I think UDisc estimates there's like over 4 million disc golf players.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that play
disc
golf.
There's only 40,000
DGN. I feel like there's more discs. There's a bigger percentage
it's
of disc golf
we're
that
in
are
it.
Really well-versed in disc golf. Than
no.
golf. Like when I used to play,
no.
I used to play golf all the time.
Percentage
finish
point.
My point. I used to play golf all the time with people. When I worked at golf courses, I talked golf all the time. And there was just not very many people that knew like golf very well. Like, at the professional level that really followed it.
I think if you went out to a disc golf course and you just talked to people that weren't us,
Trevor,
you'd find
people
the same
have
thing.
Trevor, people have no idea what they're talking about in disc golf. What are you talking about?
I think it's because we just talk to each other all the
time. Yeah, I was going to say, when was the last time
we
you
all follow it?
When was the last time you went out and just talked to like a random person that plays disc golf? They have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah, a lot of them if they don't follow
maybe,
podcasts,
maybe I'm in
and
a
stuff,
bubble. But
yeah,
maybe,
you're in a bubble. It's like, the same thing as golf, of where you'll see someone doing something in golf, and you're like, "Why the heck are you doing that?" And they've never had anyone tell them otherwise. Same thing in disc golf.
No, I'm talking about I'm not talking about knowing how to play well. I'm talking about knowing, like, the
They have no idea
professional level. Like, what I'm saying, like,
yeah,
in disc golf,
you're in a
like
bubble.
So many people
you're
that
in a bubble.
At least know pros and like know what they throw.
No names,
where
I would say.
I don't know. In golf, there's just so many people that just didn't follow golf at all that play golf.
Here's the big difference.
If you walk to a golf course and said Rory, people would know who Rory is, even like
everyone would.
They would probably know who Paul is to a certain extent, even if they don't follow.
Here's the big difference, I would say. I would say in the golf world, you're going to have people that golf and don't watch every PGA Tour event and probably don't watch the majority of PGA Tour events, but probably pay attention when majors come around, right? When like the big tournaments come around, they probably casually pay attention. It's the same exact thing as when you go to like a pickup basketball game. Most of those people, maybe most actually do watch NBA, but the people that don't watch NBA and just play basketball all the time, when the playoffs start, they're probably going to tune in or at least have an idea of what's going on. In disc golf, though, I think because broadcast and all the media, all that isn't nearly as big, there will be some people that play disc golf that have absolutely no idea about the Pro Tour, have absolutely no idea about the majors, and they just found a hobby that they enjoyed. It'd be the same exact thing as like if you went and started throwing what is that? The hatchets, the axes, axe throwing.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have those places now where you can go and just do axe throwing. Great date night, great activity. If you went and were like, "Oh, this is fun. I'm going to start doing this once every other week." And someone came up to you and was like, "Dude, did you just hear who won the world championship?" You're going to have no idea. You're just doing it because it's a fun activity. Same thing with bowling. Like, can you name a single bowler, Trevor?
Yeah, Jason Belmonte.
Okay,
who
Pete Weber. I just named two.
So the two most famous bowlers of all time. I think Belmonte's still in the picture. I don't think Weber is. But
I've watched. No, he's not.
But you know what I'm saying is like just because you go to the bowling alley and you play bowling doesn't necessarily have any idea what's going on.
I get your point. I think here's what I'm saying. I think that the disc golf funnel works different than the golf funnel because. The golf funnel, if you decide you want to get into golf and you get some clubs or some rentals, you go out and play golf, you can stay completely separated from anything else golf-wise very easily. Whereas I think the disc golf funnel, if you decide to get into disc golf, the funnel is a little bit different because it's almost harder to find to get into. Like you might have to go online and Google how to play disc golf, what is disc golf. Like I think because the sport has less information surrounding it, you're almost more likely to get further into it because you kind of have to get further into it in order to figure out what to do. Now it's changing.
That might be
that might make retail stores.
That might make sense with the community aspect of things, right? Where like golf.
And this is like personal experience too, because
that makes sense.
Disc golf and I get a set of discs and just by going to a disc golf website, just by going to Foundation Disc Golf, for example, let's say you want to buy more discs, you Google it, you go to Foundation Discs, and all of a sudden you find us on YouTube or something. Like I think the disc golf funnel is very easy to get you far into the sport, whereas the golf funnel, it is very easy to just play golf every other weekend and not get into it.
I'd be fascinated.
I will say to Trevor's point that like in disc golf, like people's names are actually on the discs as well. It's like when you're buying discs.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's part of the funnel. Like it's very easy to just Google who the person is on your disc.
I think what we gotta do is this summer we pick a like random Saturday. And we might have to go to like Charlotte or somewhere where we have a lot of disc golfers. And on the front of first of every tee, we ask them
survey,
three or four questions that get like intensely more disc golf knowledge heavy.
Yeah.
So it starts with, have you ever heard of the Pro Tour? Then we ask them about like a specific pro. And then, like, the last one's like, who is Cole Redolin?
If you do that at a disc golf course and a golf course with golf questions, I think disc golf wins.
I think it'd be fascinating.
I really do. Like, especially in Charlotte.
So, what
like,
Trevor,
I think if you go to a disc golf course.
Trevor, what you said, though,
ask those questions.
This is actually kind of a fascinating, like, thought process because what you said is actually really interesting because I think the reason really is on the golf side of things, golf is very intuitive in the sense of equipment. A 7-iron goes farther than a 9-iron. A 5-iron goes farther than a 9-iron. A putter is what you use
there's
on the green.
There's confusion in disc golf, and that's what gets you into it.
Yeah.
You got to start Googling.
There is a crate. Well, this is where I think it's interesting because on the golf side, the big barrier of entry, I would say, on the golf side is how difficult it is to actually play. Like the sport itself is very, very tough. You can, you have the tools, you know what the tools are supposed to do, but it's very, very tough. On disc golf, it's the opposite of where it's very easy, like to throw an object, but you don't necessarily know what the tools are doing, or you're using, I mean, how many times have we gone out and seen someone using a driver and there's they're only throwing a driver. They bought one disc and they're throwing it. They're putting with it. They're doing all that where it's like they would be so much better off having the right tools. They just don't even know. It's essentially like Silas showing up to a golf course with a putter and literally just hitting every shot with a putter and not thinking anything else. So I think that on that side, that almost makes the community aspect because, again, like you said, there isn't really that much information out there to where you now are starting to ask people. Like you would never on a golf course, you would never go up. I mean, I wouldn't say never, but it would be much more unlikely for you to go up on a golf course and ask someone like, hey, what putter did you just use? Like that looked like it's working really well. What putter is that? Disc golf, that happens all the time. And then that opens the door for them to kind of give them information. So that's an interesting kind of community aspect that disc golf has. Well,
part of it.
But I think that goes away too, once the media is bigger. Once like the information is more out there, I think that part goes away. Exactly.
Well, because who is going to go to a golf course and they've never seen someone swing a golf club? Never, like
Silas.
Right.
I feel like the average person, right? Because even Silas, before he swung a golf club,
has seen it.
The average person on the street would understand there's a driver, iron,
and they know what
putters,
and they know how it works.
And they would know just like, even if I didn't understand the iron numbering system, I would understand that my driver goes farther than my irons and my putter I use on the greens.
Right.
That's basic. That, like, I feel like is just because golf is mainstream, everyone understands that. Versus
Hold on.
People have no idea.
Hold on. Because it's also the equipment in golf is very more, it's more intuitive, not just because it's mainstream, because you can do this. You could say the same thing. You could buy a disc that says driver and you could buy a disc that says putter on it. And so if you're using the same thing that you learn from golf, where it's like my driver is going to go farther than my putter, same in golf, that's not the case in disc golf, because if your form is trash, if you're throwing it incorrectly, your putter is actually going to go further than your driver because you can't get it up to speed. True. So like that's where it's confusing.
Golf, it's a lot more simple.
Yeah. Like a 7-iron, even
like
someone
that just look at the club and say, oh, this one's shorter and it's lofted more. It's going to hit the ball higher and not go as far.
Well,
like,
that's now we're getting unintuitive.
That's how is that unintuitive?
No. I'm saying like
if I looked at the club and if I have never played golf and I look at a club, I'm never thinking about this angle.
You're probably not thinking. Like yeah, I agree. You're probably not thinking.
That's
I mean,
not. I'm not immediately. I'm not immediately going.
No, you are. You are. If someone gave you
currently,
I still have
no idea the length. How
no.
much
somebody
I
gave
if
you a someone set gave of irons, you, you're not thinking the long ones goes.
If someone gave you a no, four iron not. And someone gave you a wedge,
what,
if
without any knowledge,
but you know the driver goes furthest, and that's the longest club
because the shape.
That's what we're saying.
Anything about the length?
No, that's what we're literally saying. The shape of the club.
Trevor was saying.
No, he was talking
that's
about the
Trevor
loft.
Trevor was saying
he talked about the loft. He was talking about the loft too, though. He said
that doesn't
the loft.
Change the shape of the face. That just changes the angle of the face.
Hunter, if you put a four iron, Hunter, if
no,
you put,
I well, because I
Hunter,
have had clubs that don't fit me.
Hunter, if you
I
put a four
Brody,
iron,
I'm just
you,
choosing to get my point across
no,
right now.
If you put a four iron behind a ball and you put a wedge behind the ball, you cannot tell
Which
me that you think
go
you cannot tell me that you think they're going to both.
They're two different clubs.
No, that's what we're.
Okay,
that's
if
what
you
we're
put
talking
a
about.
Nine iron and a four iron. Which one do you think is going to go further if you set them behind the
now?
Club? No, at the beginning,
I wouldn't know.
I disagree.
One is aimed towards the sky.
Yeah, one is going to go up and is shorter.
But
one is longer.
But like, it's not a crazy line of thought to think you need air for distance.
That's not crazy. Okay, okay, that's not crazy. That's not crazy. I'll give you that.
I would agree with that if they were all the same length, but the 4-iron being the significantly
length, but the
longer.
Length you have to remember is length I is probably in when not. I first started playing golf.
Length is probably
and
not easy
I got
to pick
irons
up
that
on.
Didn't fit me, so I had 7-irons that were way too long for me. They were like in my gut when I first started playing.
Okay,
so the length meant nothing to me.
The length,
clubs,
Trevor. I will agree with Hunter in the sense
that
the length isn't as drastic. The length isn't as drastic to where it'd be the same thing as to you. You guys can tell the difference in like the width of like fairway drivers. I still can't even, right? Like you're like, oh, this one's way more shallow than this
but
one.
But I'm not talking about 7 to 8-iron. I'm talking about 4-iron and 9-iron. That's a lot of length.
I still think to the common person, they might not even be thinking about
that. Right, but that you can't comment on the intuitive of equipment if you have the wrong equipment, if you bought the wrong equipment. Like if you went out and
that was the whole point of the argument. We were talking about someone putting with a driver in disc golf.
Yeah, like having the wrong stuff.
That's saying it's
wrong equipment.
No. He said in his case, he was saying the intuitive was if you buy a disc that says putter and buy one that says driver, the putter might go further than the driver because you're brand new. What I'm saying, if you buy a correct set of irons, the 4-iron should intuitively look like it goes further than the short 9-iron. That's what I'm saying.
But not because of the length.
No, that is what I'm saying. Because I think
yeah, and that's what I'm just disagreeing.
I would
with
pick
you.
Up
that's
those
fine.
Clubs and be like, this long one is going to go further than this shorter one.
Okay.
So we have to
I just disagree with you.
See for
you
this.
You don't think you'd make that jump in your mind? Like
I have watched myself play golf. I did not make that jump in my mind.
I thought
my 4-iron didn't fit me because of how long it was.
Trevor, I think if
and
you
that's,
gave...
That's when I was trying to break 100 the beginning of this year. I literally was like, this 4-iron is way too long for me. I don't like how much longer it is in my other clubs.
Trevor, I think if you just gave... now that
I understood that it's supposed to be longer. I didn't know that. I just assumed it was supposed to be the same length as all my other clubs.
Okay, fair enough.
I was going to say, I think if you gave someone a proper...
Connor also is agreeing with me. He has no idea.
I think if you gave someone a proper 9-iron or a proper 4-iron, and you're like, here, hit this club, and you didn't say anything about it, they hit it, and then you said, here, hit this club... and you ask them what the difference was, they probably won't say the length. Now, if you handed them two clubs at the same time and were like, inspect both these clubs and tell me what the differences are, they would probably then be able to tell you like, oh, this one's a little bit longer. But I think
I think Hunter's point disagrees with that because he just said he had his 4-iron, like he immediately thought it was way too long for him.
I was choking down on it. I still choke down on it. It's the only way I can hit it comfortably.
I mean, it's the difference between like bending over significantly and not at all.
I know, but I'm just saying like I think the golf swing is so complicated that I think people aren't even thinking about that unless it's to the point of what Hunter was just saying of where it's way too long or way too short. I'm saying if you gave them proper clubs, like the difference between my 9-iron and my 4-iron is not drastically different. To where if you did give it to someone that's never – if I gave it to Silas, he probably wouldn't think anything of it really.
I mean, what I would say about golf for like the intuitive, I would say that it would get even more confusing because it's a lot easier to hit a 9-iron. So your 9-iron probably will go further than your 4-iron.
Mm-hmm.
So
That's actually another great point. My 7-iron for a long time went farther than my driver. Because my driver exposed my slice so much.
You're just
more.
Not hitting it correctly.
Well, here,
that's the same as disc golf.
That's the same as disc golf. Here's a big similarity in disc golf, but I don't think disc golf does this yet. Of where when you're like a brand new player in golf, one, you don't need all the clubs. Two, you don't necessarily need it to be fitted to you. Like you don't need to figure out what your shaft needs to be. You don't need to figure out what your lie angle. All that stuff doesn't really matter. In disc golf, though, I would say, I take that back. Because you also have people that have, like, fitted clubs, like, super expensive PXGs, and it's like, bro, you could literally shoot the same exact thing you're shooting with, like, a Walmart club. Like it. So those are the same, actually. Because I was going to say, like, disc golf, even, like, brand new players think they have to have, like, all these discs and get all this stuff, and it'll make them better. But that's exact. I think that's just human nature. I think human nature is just like, if I get the right equipment, I will be way better versus like,
I spent money on a driver when
just looking for something to blame.
The driver doesn't
you
fix
hit
my
that
slice.
Driver nice.
It doesn't fix my slice though.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so correct. I take that back. I take
I just
that
was like, well, this one I can put a weight all the way to the draw setting and maybe it'll fix my slice. It didn't.
What do you guys think about this? I was talking about this a little bit on, I think, Twitter Spaces yesterday. Someone asked me like, hey, what are some good drills and stuff to get better at putting? I have recently come to the conclusion that I think putting, the way that we, the way I have gone about putting, and maybe the way that other people have gone about practice putting, is completely incorrect. Putting,
please.
Putting should be treated as the same exact way that shooting is treated in basketball. And hear me out. This is what I think. Right now, when you tell someone, hey, or if someone told you, hey, I'm going to go practice disc golf, what would you think they would be doing? The majority of people.
Throwing. If they're going to practice, like round. Doing the field work.
Like either playing a round or probably going to a field and throwing far, right?
Yes.
Correct.
If someone said, hey, I'm going to the gym to practice basketball, what do you think they're going to be doing?
To practice or to play basketball?
If they're like, I'm going to practice basketball, it would be the same thing.
You're just going to go shoot.
It would either be shooting or playing, right? Those two options. Yeah. You would never think that person's going to be like, practice their dribbling, practice their passing, practice their defense, right? They're going to be either shooting by themselves or playing in a pickup game. I think disc golf needs to switch to that, and the shooting in basketball needs to be the putting in disc golf. So instead of like coming up with all these different drills and all this stuff, like if you want to get good at shooting free throws in basketball, what do? You literally just stand on the free throw line and shoot free throws. You don't do any drills. You don't do any whatever. I think it's the same exact thing. I think you don't need drills to get better at putting. I don't think you need specific things.
No, you just need repetition.
I think you literally need to treat it as you would treat it basketball shooting. You need to be able to put up shots every day and tons of shots.
I agree.
I would argue that the only thing that you ever actually need to drill, so to speak, in shooting free throws or putting is pressure. And the only way
that only comes when you're good. That only comes when you're good. You don't need to be doing that when you're trying to get good.
I will say when I was playing basketball,
I think they go hand in hand.
When I was playing basketball, a lot of
no. If you are making 2 out of 10 free throws, why the heck do you need to be like, all right, I need to add more pressure?
Okay, I mean, I'm not saying that bad, but I'm also saying that like by adding pressure, I'm not saying do it complex. I'm just saying like, don't stop the drill until you make 5 in a row. Like,
I agree, but I think that comes once you're actually good at that task, which I don't think the average disc golfer
but
is. So it's like doing drills and stuff makes no sense.
But I will say like a 10-foot putt in disc golf, it takes probably an hour to get pretty good at making that putt. Like if you've never even held a disc before, you can make a 10-footer. Whereas in a pressure situation, making a 10-foot putt is going to be more difficult.
But I think it's just a repetition thing.
Well, I agree. But I'm just saying, like, I'm not saying you should do anything specific. I'm just saying that drilling pressure is the only thing that you really should drill in putting. It's the only point I'm trying to add.
Well, because when
you're good, though.
When I was playing basketball and I was trying to get better at shooting.
Well, you don't have to do anything extra, though. Like, that's part of my argument. You don't have to be like, I'm doing pressure drill today. Just say, I'm not going to, like, I'm not leaving until I make this many out of this many putts. And it just, like,
that sounds like a drill that you did at the very end of your practice. That doesn't sound like what you just said. Like I'm going to make 5 before I leave. That sounds like what you should do after doing a full hour of just putting.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I think most of your putting practice should be repetition. And then the only thing you should ever add is a little bit of pressure.
Brody, when you were playing basketball and you were trying to get good at basketball, would you like, was your main way that you practice was just go to a gym and just shoot however you wanted, wherever you wanted?
Yeah. When I first was like trying to get better at shooting, well, I would start.
Or did you have drills that like helped you get better at shooting?
Well, now we're talking about a form thing. Is there a form?
That's disc golf putting is like, we don't know what the best.
That's what I'm saying. No, but I think that's
rep out your form is like for me in basketball, I would go in, I would get a few just touchy shots, which I would equate to walking in and hitting a few 10 footers to get myself ready to putt. Right. I would get my wrist flick, everything down in basketball. And then, which I would equate to walking in.
Did you say rear flick? Did you say rear flick?
Wrist flick. I said wrist flick.
Oh, you said wrist flick. Basketball. Oh, I thought you said rear flick.
I really got my butt into my shot.
No, I was thinking like you're then, like that. You call this a rear flick is like when you go back to like shoot. I was like, that's an interesting.
I see it. No, no. Anyways, so that's what I would equate to like walking in, hitting a few 10 footers. But then I would have either like game, like when I first was learning to shoot, I would have like progressively get back. Like I remember I had a drill that I would start at like in the middle of the paint, mm-hmm. and I'd hit three without touching rim. Then I'd go back to the free throw line and have to hit three without touching rim. Then I'd go back to the three pointer and have to hit three without touching rim. That was like one of the drills. And it, obviously that took a while. It had to be in a row.
It's still at the end of the day, a repetition drill.
Yeah. Like, you're still just shooting, drill,
which I think most putting, I think what putting drills Brody, are not just putting,
but I think Brody is, are you arguing Brody against drills that are like, mechanical drills?
No. I think what I'm arguing, because again, basketball, like Hunter, what you're saying too, like, did I do drills? Like, obviously I did drills of like me coming off of a screen and catching a ball and shooting. And then I did drills of me crossing someone over and then going, like, basketball obviously has way more to it of like stuff you need to work on when it comes to shooting. But again, like when you ask someone like, hey, would you do like some of the best shooters in the NBA, I'm sure they have periods of time of where, I mean, we've seen videos of where like Steph or Clay or whoever, Ray Allen, of where they're just standing behind a three-point line. They have a couple rebounders and they're literally there for 10 minutes just shooting the same exact shot. And they're just getting rebounded. Yeah. Boom, shot, rebound, shot. My thing is, I think a lot of times, I think disc golfers are looking for that drill, looking for that thing that is going to make them a better putter. And I think I'm trying to like eliminate that and say, listen, there isn't necessarily a drill that you need to do to make yourself better at putting. You literally just need to spend more time putting like that. Yeah. That's what I'm trying.
It's just people looking. That's people looking for the shortcut.
Correct. Like, that's what I'm trying. Repetition.
Repetition is king.
Correct. There is no secret drill where in putting in golf, I would disagree. I would say putting in golf, there are a lot of like form drills and things that like, where your eyes are located near the golf. There's a lot of things in golf putting that you can work on before you even get to like the repetition of like just actually taking a putt. Where in disc golf, there really isn't. It's the same thing. Like, think about some of the shooters that we've seen that are really good at shooting. They don't necessarily all have perfect form, right? And we know kind of what perfect form looks like in basketball. In disc golf, like, we don't even know what the perfect putting form looks like. And we have seen people from Isaac Robinson, Paul Macbeth, Gannon Burr, Ricky Wysocki, Eagle McMahon. If you looked at those guys all putting, they are all very, very different. And they are all very good.
There's a lot of ways.
There's a lot of ways to get good at it.
How I view putting drills is it's more of a way to keep putting practice interesting to make sure you get the repetitions.
Correct.
So that's now, like one of my favorite drills is like, I put a disc down, I have a stack of five putters. If I make all five, I move back a foot. If I make three out of five, I stay. If I make less than three out of five, I move forward a foot. Because it just drills in just a lot of repetitions and it helps me move to where I'm working on where I'm bad at.
If that is the question of like, hey, I have a hard time putting for an hour, like I get bored, what can I do? Sure, that's fine. Like, here's some games that you can do to help you get through that hour. But if your question is, I need to get better at putting, what do I need to do? I agree with what you're saying of like, if that's what you're struggling with, of where you putt for 10 minutes and you're drills, like, but again, do you ever get bored of shooting a basketball? That's my point.
Well, I think drills,
I think you have to trick your mind.
Like,
I think you have to trick your mind.
In basketball, though, if I didn't have drills and I was, let's say my favorite shot was the corner three, right? I was awful at top of the key three because I never shot it in a game. I was never in that position. And so my drills never really used that. But in basketball, if I came into the gym and I'm just shooting just to have fun, I'm going to have the most fun when I'm making shots. So it'd be very
easy
for
me
to get into a rhythm and just stand in the corner.
I would also say
drills made sure that I would like –
but
hit every spot that I'm a shoot.
I would say that an interesting thing is that a reason why, if you're using the basketball example, I think a reason why basketball for me is more interesting than putting practice is because you make less shots. If you're practicing 25 footers, a very important putt, and you're in a low pressure, you're in your basement putting, you're going to make probably 85, 90% of them. And it can get repetitive very quickly. Whereas in basketball, I bet it gets boring for Steph Curry to be out there just making 10 out of 12 threes
every
time.
Well, I think basketball,
for me,
too.
It's more exciting.
Well, free throws would be
basketball,
the best.
For me, I have to go rebound.
Yeah, free throws would be the more the best example because you're going to make the most
free
throws.
The key for me of why I could go right now and shoot for an hour and a half and have a blast basketball.
Because you have to rebound for yourself.
I couldn't go putt for an hour and a half right now and have a blast. No. I could not do it. But it's because putting, I would have 10 putters. Putt, 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 putt,
yeah,
walk in,
so
grab them, walk
repetitive.
Back. Putt, putt, putt. Whereas basketball, I shoot, I have to go get it, I have to dribble back to my spot. Most
okay.
of the time, I'm not just standing there shooting. I'm like doing something to have fun.
Well, this
like,
is
mimicking
like
a game situation.
You can cut into a shot.
I think this is an argument
so
between like amateur
shooting.
I think this is an argument versus amateur and amateur versus pro and pro, because pro basketball players, when they practice shooting, they are not getting their own rebounds. They are standing
correct.
In one spot.
They're just
shooting.
Standing there. And
so do you think they find that boring?
I think it depends
do.
On how much they love it. Because if I was in Steph Curry's shoes and you told me
I think it's different.
If I have to go stand and they pass, I'm going to have someone passing me a ball. I'm never going to have to move. I'm just shooting for an hour straight. Yes, I would get very bored.
I think that's where there is that switch that's different, right? Because if you're a professional, you're thinking like, I shot 30% from or 27% from behind the line last game. I need to get better next game. Like you're putting in the work to do that versus if you're just doing it as an amateur, as a casual, what's
very
the
true.
Point? As soon as you get bored, you're going to be like, all right, I'm done.
There's no driving factor.
Exactly. Yeah. If I right now decided I'm going to play disc golf on tour next year.
Yes.
It would not be as boring easier for me to go down there and throw 500 putts.
No, that's why in college I practiced putted a lot because I had something to practice for.
Correct. I think that's huge
I think
too.
That's,
is like,
why,
that's huge. Yeah. If you ask me a question, how do I get better at putting? I guess the question I would have to ask you first is what is your reasoning to get better at putting? Because
right.
if your reasoning
yeah, if it's just
is
to beat your buddies,
correct,
it's gonna be tough.
It's gonna be real
that
tough.
Is the like, ultimate golf trap.
Yeah, that is it at the end.
Because like it's the same thing with short game in golf. You are not gonna have a ton of motivation to skip the driving range, go up onto the putting green, and hit 3 foot putts for an hour if you're mm-hmm. just playing casual rounds with your buddies.
No,
yeah.
But it's how you're gonna shave like 5 or 6 strokes off of your
Heck,
game.
I had the bet to break 100, and I don't think I practiced my short game for more than 20 minutes.
Exactly.
At time.
So it's the trap of golfing where it's just not fun to practice that thing. But if you actually want to be good at it, it's very clear. Like if I had to like bet money on somebody's putting getting better, and they asked me what to do, I would say putt 1,000 times every single day. Like that's how you're going.
Well,
scientifically,
in
your muscles
golf,
are going to get better at putting.
In disc golf, if you do that, the pressure of 10 footers is going to go away a lot easier.
Oh,
too.
Well, sure. Yeah.
Because if I'm putting 1,000 times a day, then
a
I'm a step up to a 10 footer and my muscle memory is going to take over. No matter how much I'm nervous, I'm still going to have that muscle memory.
Yeah.
Right.
I might get
the yips and stuff, but it's going to be way easier than like our current situation where I haven't practiced putted in 5 months, probably like truly practice.
Well, it's just like,
putted,
it's just
and
like,
I step up to a 10 footer with pressure. Yeah. You bet your bottom dollar. I'm scared.
It's just like, if you make your first like 4 10 footers of the round,
oh, then you're golden.
You're the next one is going to look very easy to make. Whereas that first hole, you have a 10 footer for birdie, you're shaking.
Yeah.
You're like, I haven't even like,
and if you're saying you're not, you're either a very good putter or you're lying to yourself.
that's the nature of the game. Repetition. It's boring.
It is boring.
Very boring.
Did you guys have anything else, or do you want me to grab some of these comments
from
Twitter?
Two or three from Twitter and then wrap it up here. Sci Guy's got to head out in a little bit.
Okay. I'll grab a couple of these things.
We got to do like a foundation, like off-season putting challenge or something, and have like people able to join and like show.
Oh, heck yeah.
Just like spreadsheet it. So like we do like a certain amount of putts per week, and then like watch people like on have a leaderboard.
Yes. Is there a way of doing that to where it'd be like easy to?
Yeah, I mean, you can figure it out.
Because I absolutely love. Have you guys been seeing this bike journey thing I'm doing? Did you guys hear
about
that?
Yeah.
Where I'm biking from Dallas, Texas, to New York.
On Peloton.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like this. I don't know if you guys can you guys see me? Because I can't see you. Can you see me?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm showing the people.
Describe it.
Okay, I'm showing the people a map, and you can. There's like a little guy, and that's where I'm starting. and then you can see where my bike is. So right now I am.
How far down the road are you?
I am 75 miles out. Like okay. away from what Dallas.
14,925 to go?
1,500.
Oh, that was off, huh?
That's fun, Hunter.
Hey, I had the right numbers.
I thought you said
14,000.
Did you say 1,400? I thought you said 1,400. You're pretty close.
14,000.
I said 14,000. But
oh, yeah, 1,400 more miles. This will get obviously a lot better once I start doing like 90-minute classes because right now I'm doing pretty much 45. So I'm going roughly like 15, 18 miles every class, and I do like three classes right now, which I'm going to ramp up to five. So it will drastically get faster as I go along and get better in shape. But that's a fun thing. If we could do something like that of where it's like a tracking device, but I guess if we want to do a competition, that could kind of be cool too. How do we want to do it? Do we want to do it like everyone gets 30 putts from 30 feet and you mark down how many you make?
UDisc putting game. Don't they have a putting game in UDisc?
Use the UDisc putting game and just track people's scores, and then like you're just trying to reach a certain score.
Putting practice.
Can we like get into like a
start practice? Yeah, so you just do one cycle of the UDisc putting practice.
But can we get
5 from 11, 22, 33, 44, 55, 66?
But can we do that like as a team? Like, is there a way of us like doing a group, or do we just do that and then you input it into a spreadsheet?
I think you'd have to input it into like a Google Doc.
Yeah, we
could
put it into a Google Doc.
That'd be cool. That'd be a fun thing to do this off season. Get people out there putting. Get everyone a little bit better putting.
Maybe what we do is we like try and hit a certain number of total putts, and then we like donate that amount to charity.
That'd be cool.
Total putts?
Yeah, we have like
We might be talking $100,000.
No, it's about total putts made. Obviously, we would cap it at a number that we feel comfortable with, but like that way help.
Like we get 5,000 people in here. They all putt 20 times. We have $100,000.
Getting 1,000 people or 5,000 people into a putting league would be the most absurd thing ever. That's not.
It'd be so fun though.
We might get 100 people.
You never know.
100 people all make 1,000 putts.
I'm gonna workshop
that
this putting.
That seems very reasonable.
I'm gonna workshop the putting.
I'm all for philanthropy, but not when it's gonna cripple us.
I'm gonna workshop the putting league today, and we'll figure something out.
All right, I'm gonna ask. I got a couple tweets here. We're gonna go through real quick. Why doesn't Merrell or some other shoe company make a disc golf shoe? What holds back the sport from breaking into those markets?
I think that what's going to end up happening is the Bushnell model, where you just take a shoe that's a trail running shoe, because that's all you need in disc golf.
Yes.
And you can keep it on your site too.
Slap a name on it.
You have the Adidas Terex GT4 or whatever, and then you have the Adidas Terex disc golf, and they're the same shoe, but one just says disc golf.
Yeah.
And then you just like come up with a little marketing play of like the flex of the shoe.
I don't think people understand the scale of like a shoe manufacturer like Adidas or Merrell, even like a trail more niche company. Like they don't even understand the scale of the sales they do versus like what they would do for just a like disc golf.
But I do think
it'd be shockingly low.
I think it's something where like
I think the Bushnell model is the
very
only
little
way.
Effort.
Yeah,
I think that's the only very way. Little effort, very little money.
Make it sound
make
like
a lot.
No,
make
correct.
It sound like a disc golf.
I agree, but making a new shoe pointless.
Well, it's also pointless because like. What's wrong with a trail running shoe?
Yes. Well,
we
no, Hunter, even on
something we don't know.
Even more on top of that is what's wrong with a running shoe? Because Calvin wears running shoes. What's wrong with Vans?
Well,
Drew wears Vans. What's wrong with
the bottom grip? Is it?
No.
Like if you play a muddy course in Virginia, you're going to want a trail
running
shoe.
Never has bothered Calvin. I've talked to him. He's never had.
It is true.
I have slipped and fallen multiple times where
you've also slipped and fallen over your own feet. Like that's not a good example. My point is there isn't a big enough advantage. Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
There isn't like one shoe that stands above all.
No, but there definitely, we can all agree, there's definitely no need for a built specific
correct
disc golf shoe.
There's too many shoes that, and I mean, tennis, there's too many shoes that already
there's
work.
There's probably a lot of sports where that's the case, but there's enough of a market there that it makes sense.
No, but like football cleats are way different than soccer cleats.
Tennis is a good example. You can play tennis and have a good time.
Right. You cannot play tennis in running shoes.
Wide number of shoes.
I'd
do it.
Not at a high level.
Sure can.
No, I guess, again, this is where our point goes. at a low level versus a high level, you could.
What's the difference between tennis shoes and running shoes?
Tennis shoes are designed
for,
to go
for tennis.
Tennis shoes are designed to go left and right. Running shoes are designed to go forward. So when
a basketball
shoe,
could you use a basketball shoe for tennis? A certain basketball shoe at a high level, could you play tennis in? I bet you
they're
could.
I bet you could, but I think people at that high level are going to go for the lighter shoe. Like basketball shoes are a little heavier.
Very light.
They make Adidas basketball shoes.
I had Kobe's that, I mean, felt like I was just wearing socks.
My point is, Brody.
I agree. There are, of course,
tennis like can make a shoe that's customized for it, but there's a market too.
There's enough tennis players that it makes sense.
Where like, because there might be.
There's also clay courts. Clay courts are probably a little bit different than basketball courts. Like, there's
50 years.
I agree.
50 years, there might be a disc golf shoe that we're like, yeah, you could use a trail running shoe, but the disc golf shoe, like,
correct.
Why would you not pick it? But it's going to happen because the market is there before anything else.
No, you're right. You're right. That makes sense. Okay.
I want a disc golf shoe with like sideways tread.
Like on the side?
Directional tread. That's what the idiots did.
No. The balls of my feet, instead of facing tread forward, it faces this way. So that while I'm running up, I got the tread working in my favor.
Okay. Why don't forehand frisbee drives look anything like an MLB pitch? Because pitchers are not allowed a moving start. You'd think they, of anyone, would have mastered forehand throwing mechanics.
It's a lot more. Like, I feel like
saying, like guys that throw submarine and like sidearm, I guess is what he's saying.
Because like a crow hop would be the best example of a run in to a throw, right?
I would.
You're,
I would
you're
say
be able to generate way more power up top.
I would say more like shortstop to first base, like shortstop for first base, like where they sidearm it like that. That's a very similar movement to a forehand and disc.
That's the closest you're going to get because most, like a pitcher, is not throwing a wrist heavy throw. Now, if they're throwing a curveball, they're going to snap their wrist down to get curve. But a disc is completely dependent on you getting the snap of your wrist down. Whereas a baseball, that ball is going to roll off of your finger. So you could completely arm it and it's still going to spin at a decent rate. Obviously, there is wrist involved to be a good pitcher. But a disc, if you just try and arm it, like if I threw a disc, I played baseball. If I throw a disc the same way I threw a baseball and didn't think about my wrist at all, that thing is going to wobble all over the place. So that's like the big difference is like if you take a baseball.
Well, isn't that just a more powerful motion? The overhand. It's the same thing in football. Like the over the shoulder throw is more powerful than.
Yeah,
like,
you have
try to try to like try to sidearm a football. Like see how far you can throw that. That's
yeah,
not going
yeah,
anywhere.
Yeah, over yeah, overhand is
well,
much
the,
more.
The biggest thing I think is again you get more air under it.
But like if you see there's actually been baseball pitchers that have played disc golf. Dylan Cease is one of them, and there was like a reliever for the Reds a few years ago, and he was throwing these huge sidearms, and he, I believe, threw sidearm pitches as well. And you could tell he had a ton of power behind it, but his spin, his rotation wasn't that great. Because you're not used to flicking your wrist.
You need more pine tar.
Dude, more pine tar.
All right.
I think there's just differences.
Flight numbers have always seemed inconsistent between different discs or even manufacturers. Discs also have different characteristics based off of arm speed. Will we ever see a standardization for a flight number based off a certain arm speed? Are there other solutions? I think this would be the next breakthrough in disc golf manufacturing is if someone did go out and spend the money to say, hey, if you throw this fast, this is what the disc is going to do. If you throw this fast, this is what the disc is going to do. I think that would be a big breakthrough.
I think that's what
in
the PDGA needs to be doing.
The PDGA.
No. They don't need it.
The PDGA would buy.
No.
I think it should be stand. I think
Well, the PDGA is getting discs sent to them to approve for PDGA play, right?
It makes the most sense
for when they get that in to have the system and assign flight numbers back to the manufacturers.
And
this is what your flight
obviously
number is.
That needs to be done on an exact scale if it's going to be done.
Correct.
So they
I'm fine
to,
with that.
Also,
I thought you were saying that the PDGA was the one that needed to tell
how the flights
were going to fly based off of arm speed. I feel like that's a manufacturer.
If flight numbers are ever going to be relied upon, there needs to be a robot that shoots the disc at the exact speed and angles.
Or even a wind tunnel. Then you can figure out the specifics. Like,
well, in any case, the angle of the disc and the speed of the disc and the spin of the disc needs to be known so that we can get exact guarantees on how a disc flies.
Well,
whether
it's
a robot or a person
the problem that's happening right now is Innova has a system. Discraft has a system. Latitude has a system. Prodigy has a system. Discmania has a system. And so an 8-speed for Discraft is a 7-speed for Innova, which is a 9-speed for... I mean, that's why flight numbers can't be trusted.
Are a loose guideline. And my rule of thumb is, like, if you're looking for an overstable disk, buy something on the overstable side of things, flight number wise, and then just, you're going to have to see how it flies.
Yeah, just use them as a very loose roadmap.
Yeah. Like, I would never, but never, ever use them as if they're
It's like
to
getting
be,
on
like,
a highway perfect. And you know you're headed east or west.
Right.
But, like, just don't trust it to get you to the beach because you're driving east.
Exactly.
Ooh. Just know you're gonna eventually hit the ocean.
I felt like you were gonna do like I thought you were gonna do like a movie quote there because that sounded very familiar to me. But then you went somewhere that I don't remember, and I was like, "That's pretty good, Hunter. That's actually deep."
I was just making it up.
Okay, I think that's definitely. Yeah, what? No, is that from Inception?
A marketing tool. Huh?
Is that from what?
Wait, say the beginning of what you just said again.
It's like if you get on the road, I don't know, man, like start driving east. You're
I
gonna
think
get to
that's,
the beach, but it might not be the one you want to get
I think to. That's from Inception where who's the main character in Inception?
You're thinking, I'm going to find you.
Is that – no. Is that Matt Damon? Who's the main character?
No, Inception is DiCaprio.
Okay, DiCaprio's wife. Where she's sitting on the she's sitting on the windowsill.
Oh,
and she's
saying,
like,
we're going on a train. We're getting on a train.
And
we
you don't know where we're going,
but we know we'll get there.
Yes. That's what I thought. Yeah. I thought that's what Hunter was doing.
That's flight numbers.
Okay. I thought Hunter was doing
I get it.
Okay. Trevor's with me. The way you said it, I think, Hunter, like the pacing that you said it was just like that, was just like the way she said it. So I was like, ooh, okay.
So you're saying I should be an actor?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not? Okay, I got two more. We'll end it on the last one. I think will be a good discussion. This one would be real quick. Obviously, I've had a lot of people ask me about this, so I'll just put this to bed. They want to know, knowing about how successful Good became, would you stick with it or stay with your decision to start disc golf if you were giving a time machine? So the whole situation with Bro 5 and whatnot.
this guy just wants to have a victory lap right now.
No, that's fine. The whole situation with Bro 5 is like that model was going to be very successful. Like if I would have been okay with what was happening in Bro 5, it would have been a very successful model, but I just don't think down the road it had, and like obviously what's going on with Good, I'm not super surprised. It's the same stuff that we dealt with Bro 5. My whole thing is like when you have a group. So perfect example is like Dude Perfect, for example. Their group has all bought into their group and they're all about their group. They always do the group and that's it. That's a much easier thing for everyone to get on and like go long term than having everyone do their own separate things. And I think that's where it gets tricky with Bro 5, with Good and all that stuff. So
The only group that's done it is Sidemen, right? They've done it like successfully.
I think with Sidemen, they all were successful individually, and then they came together. Yes, and they did have a rough patch. You're right. Go ahead, Trevor.
They had a patch where they weren't really collabing on. They started the Sidemen channel, and then kind of left it in the dust for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's just recently that they've realized that buying it. I think their individual channels, a lot of them were kind of like losing identity, losing traction, because they originally all started in FIFA and that's lost a lot of views. And so I think now they've just realized that, oh, if we come together, the money is there, and that's where it's happened. So they have bought in now. But
because like KSI is huge.
Yeah.
With or without side.
They took a bit of aging and maturing to get to that point.
Yeah.
But I also think they all were big individually before. So I think that has a huge impact. That's of where true. Like they didn't grow into something
versus like if Trevor and I were to start a disc golf channel now, and as Foundation grew, our personal channels grew, and then we were trying to push our personal channels, and then like
correct
is that what you're saying basically
that's where it gets kind of tricky is like if both of you were like, hey, we want to start our own personal channels and do that, and that's where like I, you know, on the business side of things, that's where like for me, it's definitely in a difficult state because obviously I have my individual channel. It doesn't make any sense to like let that just go to the wayside because that is something that we can use to promote foundation, to promote drops, to whatever. But at the same token, that's where it is tricky, the situation I'm in of like, okay, when do I do stuff individually? When do I do stuff with foundation? And that's where I think, especially once I retire from disc golf and I'm no longer playing professional disc golf, then I can do a career path change of where like everything is sole focus on foundation versus right now I'm still having to be like, well, I need to go out and promote for these sponsors and I need to go practice this and do all that. So that's where our situation is tricky. But imagine if you were in my situation, Hunter, and Trevor, you were in my situation, and all three of us now we're all dealing with that. Like, you guys have to deal with my crap. I don't have to deal with your crap. And I think that makes it a lot easier. So there's that. All right, last one. This is, did you guys see Andrew Fish's rant on Twitter?
Yes.
No. Okay. I saw it yesterday. Let's finish with that because someone just mentioned that to me. So I had to look it up and saw it. And it is incredible. And I don't know, Trevor.
Shall I read it?
Yeah, I think you should read it, Hunter. And then Trevor, I don't know if you want to, because I think his rant kind of opens the door to potentially what me, you, and Hunter were talking about for a potential switch in debate night. I don't know if you want to like give any, if you want to give any hints away or any kind of like what could potentially be coming.
You think I should give the
get a little feedback.
That's what I'm saying. I think this is a good way of like saying like, hey, is this something that you guys would like to see maybe debate night switch to? Because I think his rant kind of opens the door a little bit. So go ahead, Hunter.
Now, there's some words in here that I don't know how to pronounce, and there's other words that I choose to keep out of my vocabulary. So just keep
that's
that
fine. You can do a little bleep.
It's come to my attention that some people online don't like me. This is directly compromising my marketability. So I've decided that for 2023, I'm going to kowtow to popular demands and become a boring A professional athlete. Here's what you can expect. I'll take 75% less time to compose social media posts. They'll be riddled with spelling, grammatical, and factual errors. They will lack a narrative thread. I'll address any blowback or negative responses with, that's not what I meant, or it was a joke. I'll post about whatever current sporting event is going on with an otherwise contextless commentary that'll be obsolete nearly instantly. What a huge play, or gotta go for two there. Really establishing myself as a sports fan, an athletic supporter. I'll take more pictures of food, but not good food. I'm on that Arby's diet. Deluxe beef and cheese, curly fries, large Jamocha shake. I'll refer to it as fuel and then at them over and over again about the one-off disc designs and USDGC gags because I'm just so thirsty. Every time I pass workout equipment, I'll take a photo of it and caption it, the grind is on. Every time I pass a mirror, I'll dump water on my head, take a selfie and caption it, grinding. The only gains I really care about, though, are those comments and likes. Actually, let's get vaguer on the photo posts. I'll take photos of landscapes, cars, dogs, flowers, whatever. I'll rotate through five variations of it's a vibe caption. Y'all, Fish just gets it. It is a vibe. Any photos of me gonna have sparkles. Run that S through a dozen filters. Any money in disc golf is better than no money in disc golf. I will milk that for all it's worth by endorsing collaborations with oppressive regimes and employing sweatshops to create my apparel for sale at immense profit. So that's it. No more challenging existing structures or procedures. No more critical thinking by writers or readers. If any of my future posts make you think at all beyond their surface, I insist that you report the post, block me, and encourage others to call me a dumb A. There's only one right option, and that's the one we're all going to get on board with. Let's just go along to get along, float with the tide, agree to agree. Nuance is for suckers. Context doesn't matter. Things are exactly one way. Anyone can be an expert. And if you don't like the way an institution functions, remember that the best course of action is to shrug, mumble, ah, well, what can you do, and go back to coasting. And so I resolve for 2023 to be the least offensive, blandest, most basic presence of social media, and when in doubt, office gif.
Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say someone hurt him.
What? I was going to say, what? What kind
what could
of...
possibly...
Because I got... started that. I don't follow him on
like, when
Twitter.
You're Fish, like... You can't let him get to you like that.
I was going to say, I don't follow him on Twitter, but I definitely have seen some of his tweets that like I've either been mentioned in or other people have tagged me in.
If you're going to be the controversial Twitter guy, like you can't let him get to you like that. Then they win.
Yeah, didn't he always come off as like he didn't really care about social media, and he was just like,
sounds like he cares.
It sounds,
obviously I get his narrative, which is like,
some of this stuff is really funny. You guys are, some of this stuff is really, really funny.
It was a very funny thread.
And here's the thing. Obviously you can say whatever you want on Twitter. Like, you know, I get what he's saying is that he makes takes on Twitter that people disagree with, because he does say polarizing things on Twitter a lot of times. And he's basically saying, fine, I'll just regurgitate, and mentions a lot of things that probably other professional disc golfers do. Slightly hurtful, I guess. But like,
do you think he was going after disc golf professionals, or is he going after sports professionals?
Definitely disc golf professionals. Here's what I think he's saying is basically, Brody, you've said basically what the essence of his tweet was saying multiple times, where your brand and your revenue and everything is big enough. Your influence and everything's big enough that what you say on social media doesn't directly affect your bottom line, right? Like, if you go out, you can have opinions on stuff, and it's not going to hurt you because it's okay. Like, if you take a little bit of a hit, it's okay. Whereas other disc golfers that are trying to grow their social media, maybe they haven't monetized YouTube or social media or anything yet, and they're trying to grow their fan base, they have to tiptoe around subjects, right? Yeah. Which creates a very bland, you know, copy paste personality where their personality can't come through because they're worried about revenue or their tour series disc not selling or whatever, which is a weird line because, like, basically what Fish is saying is like,
yeah, because I
he's hurt his marketability, quote unquote, but in doing so, he's probably, in my opinion,
I gotta be honest, what hurts his marketability the most is that he's not that good at disc golf.
Fair. I think it's better, though, to be someone who is authentically you, and you might have a smaller fan base, but that smaller fan base is way bigger fans of you than if you are just this, like, beige version of yourself, and now you have a way bigger fan base, but those fan bases don't know you, and so they're not, like, I feel like, personally, that Fish on Twitter and stuff, the fans of him are going to be way more vocal in defending him and way more likely to support him than the fans of, like, your average random player that just doesn't ever step
Andrew
out.
Andrew Fish is almost never on tour, and I know his name. Do you know why? Because of Twitter.
Yeah.
So, like, he succeeded in making himself more marketable because of Twitter. And like I said, like, his marketability ultimately is lower because he just doesn't – A, he doesn't tour very much. He's starting to tour more. I believe
previously,
last year he did not play very much.
Previously, he played, like, one tour event at
all. But, like, he has another job, and also, like –
I think he's going full tour.
That'd be interesting.
Maybe this is the move. Maybe this is the move.
Here's the thing. I don't know how popular he's going to be out there because there's not many disc golfers he did not hit with the shots he just fired.
But there is a chance that what triggered this was possibly – he's sponsored by Discraft, correct? So maybe he, like, went to Discraft and was talking to something, and they responded and said, like
– turned him down or something.
Well, maybe they were just like, well, I mean, hey, your Twitter takes – because we've seen Austin Hanum have to backtrack probably because Prodigy came to him
whatever
at the time.
Whatever prompted that rant, because, like
– but, like, I wonder if it was something where, like, he was talking serious to one of his sponsors, because he has several different sponsors, and they were like, hey, well, like, to be honest with you, we need you to cool it on Twitter a little bit, you know, whatever. And he was like, oh –
yeah, okay. I don't know what prompted that, but
heck out of it. I like that Twitter thread.
It was funny.
What
thread.
Did he
I mean,
say
like
on
said,
Twitter
like,
though? That's bad.
He's never said. He's just very outspoken. You know where he stands on pretty much most things.
Well, that's fine. I think he's never said
anything that's like awful.
I think what he did now, obviously, if this was a whole marketing ploy in his mind of like, I'm just going to say all this stuff to get a huge stir, and now I'm going to have more people follow me to see what I say next. Brilliant. But if he's actually like being serious in the sense of like, okay, a couple things. One, a couple takeaways. One, wearing a mask has to be potentially the most exhausting thing ever. And if you're not, especially on social media, if you're having to put on a face and be someone different all the time, you're going to A, probably mess up at one point, or B, it just becomes so exhausting. So, like, even if you suck and you're a terrible person and you have a terrible personality, might as well just like have an easier life in the sense of just like not having to stress over what other people think of you all the time. The other thing I would say in response is like the worst thing you can do on social media. And I've been a fault to this in the past. The worst thing you can do is compare yourself to others. So
yeah,
if he's looking at other people's Twitter feeds and seeing them getting way more engagement, way more followers, way more retweets. And he's looking at me like, what the heck? That tweet, that stupid tweet, they didn't even spell that word right. Like, that's not even grammatically, that sentence correct. Structure is not even correct. You know, if he's doing all that, that gets exhausting too. And that's just never a good thing. There are so many people on social media that if you really look into it, of like, holy crap, this person has 10 times as many followers as I do. And they're just shaking their butt.
If you go to Twitter thinking that like informed opinions and
correct.
Quality pictures are good, like going to automatically equate to success, you're already on a losing battle.
Here's something I've realized.
You can't compare yourself to others.
Here's something I've realized in life and in content creation. Grammar matters far less than grammar police want to make you think it does.
Yeah.
Like I have read a lot of like articles from Barstool Sports.
We could misspell the title of our video and it would not change
that. I've read multiple articles from Barstool Sports that are probably grammatically so far incorrect, but they're typed how you would speak it, right?
It's almost relatable.
And what ends up happening is it ends up being like a relatable article about a subject, and then I'll go to the comments and I'll see someone in there getting all fired up because they used the wrong form of there or something. And I was like,
it's big J journalism.
Bro, I didn't even see it. Like, I just read that whole article and like, it didn't affect how I consumed it at all. Yeah. And like, I mean, I've had tweets where people come after me for like, I used the wrong grammar or something. I'm like, okay, but like, you understood what I was saying. Right.
I think bottom line, Fish definitely like something like, honestly, I could see the scenario.
I
want
to talk
about,
to the guy,
but somebody wound him up and like he vented his frustration. And honestly, it was very funny.
Yeah.
It was very funny. Like that he did it in a really well done post. So that's, I'll give him hats off to that. But I do definitely want to know like what sparked it. And then like, I think a lot of his points are really interesting to just like have a conversation about. On my side, like at the end of the day, you're just not going to be able to make everyone enjoy you. You're just not. No, and if not your possible. Personality ends up being one where more people like than a personality over here, that's just how the cards ride. Like I have tried in the past, I would say, to get the, I guess, like the OG disc golfers, like the disc golfers that have been around for a while, I have tried to get them to come around to liking me, and that's just a lose battle. Like, there's nothing I can do to get some people to like me. And so you just come to the point of where it's like, I'm just going to continue to do what I'm doing, continue to live the life that I'm living. And if some people just want to be upset about it and get mad at it, there's honestly, at the end of the day, there's nothing I can do. And it sounds like he's kind of hit that crossroads, but he's at the crossroads of where he wants to get the majority of disc golfers to like him. And he might just, his personality just might be one that it doesn't line up that way. Like Simon has that personality where like the majority of disc golfers just flood to him and just love Simon. It is what it is. There's nothing you can do about it.
It is what it is.
Unless you want to put a mask on, and then it gets very tiring. And
yeah,
tell me, man.
But Trevor, do you want to give a little
insight? I've been a great
insight?
Putter this whole time.
Well, there's not that much to insight to. I tweeted the concept. That's about as far as we gotten.
Well, we can talk a little bit about it. We can workshop it a little bit and see what people
think.
Let
me pitch my idea. Mm-hmm. Let me pitch my idea of how. So Trevor's tweet was essentially what's the show called?
Around the Horn.
Trevor's tweet is like about how, if you haven't seen Around the Horn, essentially what happens is there's a host. There's typically like four guests. They have a topic. They have time to speak on the topic. They get points awarded based on how well they present their argument for the topic. The host has a mute button, which I think is crucial to mute different people.
I'm already getting like power hungry with the
if
idea
they need
that
to. And so that's essentially the show. That's essentially the show, right? Is you present a topic. If you do a good job, you get points. If you don't do, if you do a bad job, you lose points. And there's a mute button if you go over. And then at the end, there's a winner of the show who has the most points. People get eliminated throughout. That's See, the I around the horn if you've never seen it.
Yeah, I don't think we go that route. I don't think we go the points route because I don't think that really makes sense in a podcast format.
It's going to have points for sure.
Well, it can be like Whose Line Is It Anyways, where the points are made up and they don't exactly matter. But points are fun.
The points are made up in the show.
I know, but I think the reason – I think a lot of the reason they have like the mute button and all that stuff, obviously it's interesting watching, but I think a lot of that has to – But I think a lot of that has to do with the time. Like the show has to be a certain amount of time where.
Well, I'd like my show to be that way too.
I think the mute button's important because it makes sure people can get their thought across. Because like if I'm disagreeing, like if you're disagreeing with me, Brody, it is very hard for me to sit there and not interject when you say something that I'm like, that's not how I actually think. You're putting words in my mouth. When really, for the show's sake, what needs to happen is. If I do that, I get muted, quote unquote, lose points, and you get to explain your point, and then it comes back to me, and then I get to counter argue. Regardless, I guess it would that's be, the whole idea of the show. My guess, idea for how. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying.
See,
I guess
see, I'm muted.
Well, again, I can't see you, so it's impossible for me to be able to tell when you're done talking. I'm just going off of when you finish a sentence. I guess it would be different if we had the same crew, right? Because me, you. Trevor, if we're all sitting in studio doing Bogey Bro banter, as we get better at podcasts, we get better at not cutting each other off. Because as a listener, that is the last thing you want to hear is people cutting each other off. So I think if you have the same crew, you can get better chemistry and work on that. If we're going to have like Dark Horse guests coming in, then yes, that does make sense because then there is no chemistry and you're going to have people wanting to cut each other off. So I am now switching my opinion back to I'm good with the points, the mute button, and giving people a certain amount of time to talk because I think that probably would be the only way of having like a good audio podcast from it.
Having the time limits too, it makes people like organize their points into a concise argument rather than just like going on crazy tangents.
Well, are you going It'd to give, like the, would you give the topics out beforehand?
Yes, I would give them out like 48 hours in advance at least.
Okay, because I think that obviously is crucial. It's because like if
where,
you do,
so where people can write down notes and like understand how they want to argue something. Yeah.
So here's my idea of how the format would work for debate night, right? Trevor is the host. We would have, the goal would be 4 quote unquote analysts each week.
Andrew Fish, throw his name in the
Brody,
hat.
Brody is the staple where every week he can make it. He's one of the four, right? I'm the substitute, meaning I either replace Brody or I'm the first choice if we can't fill the other three. But the goal is to get Brody and then three other personalities every week.
I think what I'm going to do, honestly, I think I've decided this in like the last 2 minutes, is that I'm going to actually do auditions. Like I'm going to have people that are interested message me and then I will send them something and like have them put together like a 30 minute segment as if they were like arguing it, and just that way I can just figure out who good personalities
30
are.
Minute or like,
can I
no,
can
30
I,
seconds
30 seconds
can I throw out some ideas of people? And obviously if Absolutely. You're listening, tweet us who you think would be good. If you're watching on YouTube, leave us some comments. Brian Earhart.
Yeah,
Brian Earhart would be very hard to beat. He'd be good.
Would be very what?
He would be very good at it. Like, he would win a lot.
Yes. He would be very good.
I think Andrew Arlen from Stat Mando would be very good.
Deion Sanders.
Yeah, and him. But, like, the guys with the statistics, like, they would be very
good. They'd crush me. I'd be like, no, but that doesn't feel right.
I don't know. The statistics would be an interesting one because...
Numbers don't lie.
Yeah, but, like...
Truth relative.
No, I'm just saying like how statistics are obviously great to have. Like if we had someone that you could reach out to and say, hey, I want a stat on this and this and this, but like how many big.
Well, he's a well-spoken guy too.
Yeah, like,
correct. I think you have to have like the personality. Cause like,
oh,
most
I would,
of these
no,
shows don't have
is what I would go. Yeah, I would go for personality before. I mean, around the horn, their cast members have always been like Woody Page was a sports journalist, and he was like the GOAT of that.
Correct.
Show. It's a lot of people that are very eloquent and can speak well. Like, that's ultimately, that's what's going to get you points in that show. Is
Charlie would be good too.
Present your argument. Yeah, Charlie Eisenhood would be good, but it's not.
Jamie Thomas wouldn't be bad.
It's not always just, is your argument good? It's how well do you present it into where it's going to convince me and people listen.
Well, that's where I'm going to lose every time. Is I just can't. I have so much
you're
up
just
here.
Have to have. You're going to have Trump arguments.
You're the shock factor. You're the shock factor.
I have so much going on up here, but it's just so hard for me to articulate in a way that makes sense.
I'm gonna try and get, see if like if I can get enough. Because the thing is, like, it's going to be, because there's going to be potentially so many personalities, it would be very difficult to coordinate. And maybe it even comes down to a thing where it's a once a month show or something. But like, I'm going to have to see. First thing first, I'm going to have to see if I can find enough people that can do it, are good enough, and their schedules make sense.
It would be great to have like a list of like 10 to 15
right.
personalities.
I'd want a lot
rotate.
Of people to where I can rotate them. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what
Silas,
I think.
Silas has to be one.
I think, oh gosh.
Because you got to give that man 48 hours with a topic and just see the argument he comes up
it's
with.
It's true.
I think Trevor, if we do end up having, let's say, a list of like 15 people that are like, I'm interested, I would love to do it if I can make it happen, I think we could make that a weekly show. Because I think from that 15,
yeah, if we had 15 people, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If we had 15,
I feel like that's realistic.
We would be able to pull. Because
Dust, the commentator, he'd probably be good.
He would, yeah.
Because really, all we really need is two people, right? Like, because me, Hunter, and then two other people, we got a show. But,
well, yes, per week. Correct. Yes, per week. I'm just saying, like, if we only have that many total.
No. I'm saying we only need two out of the 15. If we have a list of 15, we realistically, ideally, we get maybe three, but we really could do a show.
We honestly could
do a show, worst case scenario, with one and have it me, Hunter, one Silas, and some dark horse person.
Brody, Silas and Connor,
and then a dark horse
cage
person.
Match style.
Yeah.
That would be like ideally, it would be Brody and or I, if Brody can't make it that week, and three outside people.
Yeah, because if we had a topic where, like, I don't even know, whatever disc golf topic, and it was me, Charlie, Brian, and Andrew Fish, let's just say, because we just brought all those three, or throw the Statmando guy in, there's going to be, I'm going to disagree with probably almost all of them. And and some of them might agree with some of the stuff. Between each, there's going to be a lot of different viewpoints in that situation, which I think would make it a very interesting show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm curious to see what the fans think, what they, the listeners at home, if that would be something that they'd be interested in this show kind of transforming
into.
Yeah, because honestly, the real skill of that show when you're on is not when you disagree with somebody. It's when you agree with somebody and you still need to bring more to the table to get points. That's when it's the hardest.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. Look, comment down below. Let us know what you think of that. If debate night turned into that, actually getting back to the roots of why it's called debate night a little bit. Let us know what you think of that idea. Regardless, I think we at least try to get Trevor on a little bit more, because conversation's way easier with three people. Then
wow, thanks, man.
No offense,
yeah,
man.
That's pretty mean.
The show flowed better. I think everyone can agree.
Mean,
I think everyone can agree that the flow.
I don't usually watch it.
Well, I think just having a third opinion just instantly makes it.
My retainer fee is stupid high, though.
We'll cover it. We'll figure it out.
I need to get on the banter too. I need to get on the banter, because some of these things that you guys are saying are just absolutely outrageous, and there needs to be a hammer that just lays down the law, because. Sometimes you guys just get away with bloody murder.
All right. That's the next thing on our list, is we get Brody on the banter. If you haven't watched the banter, you're missing out. And Brody's going to be on it apparently soon. So there it is. We'll talk to you same time, same place next week.